Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Breathtaking football! Nice. That's what Maryland does!
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Are you a big man? Pop, I'm talking to you!
What?
You wake up in the morning, you start putting on my big boy pants! You put a little jacket, you go! You take your lunch because you got big boy pants on!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
I can say big loud things! I can be demonstrative! Is this how you conduct yourself in a democracy?
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
We want to look to the future, we've got to tear down the past. Babe Ruth was nothing more than a fat old man with little girl legs.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan. You just missed Dirt performing just one of the greatest fight song singing performances of all time.
I thought I nailed it.
Nailed it. Right on cue, right on with the beat.
Right on cue, man.
Did you have any snare in your headphones?
I didn't have any snare.
Okay.
No, tempo and that kind of stuff's never been my forte. When I was in band in middle school, I used to play the trombone in band, and I just kind of go. I wouldn't really follow the music. If the band was big enough, you couldn't really tell. There was a couple other trombone players, you know what I mean? Like, if there was one that was kind of out of tempo, it didn't really stick out that much. I just kind of do my own thing.
It was great. I'm glad we recorded it. We'll try to tweet it out, too. All right, it's 1 o'clock. We'll get into some more college football Pac-12 stuff, but it is time for the NFL Whip Around.
Frozen Tundra. The Raiders.
How about those Cowboys?
Well, let's start Thanksgiving. It gave us almost nothing. If anything, it was a great nap time for two games. We'll start in Detroit. The Matt Patricia got fired game. Deshaun Watson putting on a show.
Look at Duke Johnson tosses it back. And wide open is Fuller for the touchdown. Are you kidding?
I mean, this is unbelievable, just silencing the fans in here, but this is outstanding play calling.
You know how many plays are run like this right now out in the backyards of America on Thanksgiving Day? This is a sandlot play, it looked like.
Yeah, Texans beat up the Lions 41-25. I fully subscribe to the Lions purposely dogging this game because they thought there was a chance their coach would get fired.
This is the best news ever for Detroit. You got to lose on Thanksgiving, you take it because it gets rid of Matt Patricia, and now you can go maybe hire Bieniemy or somebody else as your coach. I love Tony Romo. He had another one of those yesterday with, like, a play on words thing. It's like, hey, hear what I did there, Jim? Play on words.
Yeah.
He cracks me up, man.
Washington football team just obliterated Dallas as well.
Here comes Tim Settler.
Oh, they got a fake punt. Snap it back to Thompson, and he runs a reverse. Coming right, Cedric Wilson, and he's going to lose yardage. Oh,
that was crazy.
Instead of punting the ball away, now from their own 24.
That was crazy.
Instead of just punting the ball away, and they didn't have 5 yards to go.
No.
They had 10 yards to go.
By the time he pitched it back to Wilson, he's 15, 20 yards before he's even going to get to the first down.
I have a sandwich bet with Swag. I think Dallas is going to fire McCarthy. I think he's a one-year. Yeah.
What does
he show you that gives you any confidence?
Absolutely nothing. The ending in Green Bay wasn't great either. On that play, too, I think they had a guy wide open. He just didn't throw it. There was a guy like 15 yards down the field.
They did a reverse.
Jumping up and down.
On fourth and 10.
Ah, Dallas. I did not see that coming. I actually thought Dallas was going to win that game going away, and then they got scored by 21 points, and there's a chance Washington is hosting a playoff game.
Speaking of did not see it coming, how about Atlanta hosting the Raiders?
Crumbling pocket. It's intercepted and picked off on the play. This is Deion Jones. He'll take it all the way. Oh, what a change of events.
Ooh, Kevin Harlan, CBS Sports on the call there. Falcons beat up the Raiders 43-6. By the way, Nance and Romo on the first call, 105.3 The Fan on the Cowboys radio network on the second there.
I'm not sure if there's a bigger head-scratching result from the weekend or of the entire NFL season than what happened in Atlanta yesterday. That made no sense to me. And we warned you last week, the Raiders, the only thing that would happen to them that wouldn't end up on Atlanta was if they read their clippings, they were got high on themselves because they played a really good game at home against Kansas City. You're going on the road to take on Atlanta. You don't have room for error. You're not, you know, the number one seed in the AFC. You're fighting for a playoff spot. So to not show up against a bad Atlanta team, it's inexcusable and probably the biggest head-scratching loss of the year for me.
All right, let's go to Buffalo where, boy, this had disaster written all over it for Anthony Lynn and the Chargers as the Bills take care of the Chargers.
Allen going to keep it. Going to try the left side. Diving for the pylon, and he got there.
Yeah, the Chargers almost covered the spread there in the last second, Bob, but they decided to run it with no timeouts and 30 seconds to go, which took about, oh, you know, all of the clock down. And then in their final play, Herbert appeared to audible into a quarterback sneak, but his offensive line dropped back into pass coverage. He was obliterated, and they lose by 10 to the Buffalo Bills.
That was one of the worst coaching examples I've ever seen. You hit a Hail Mary, you go down there, you run the ball without a timeout with 30 seconds left, and you're down by 10.
And you have Keenan Allen on your football
Keenan
team.
Allen, and then you take Keenan Allen out, then you throw a ball into the ground, basically, and then you try a quarterback sneak and pass protection. Yeesh, talk about a coaching staff that needs to get fired.
Yeah, it's not looking good for Anthony Lynn. Not much to add here, except for the Giants royally screwed me on spraying the line because the Bengals' backdoor covered, but, you know, here's a highlight.
And the Bengals, who need a field goal to win it, start at midfield. Allen in trouble. Ball is out as he's sacked. Bounding around. It's covered by the Giants. And the Giants are going to win this ball game and move into first place in the NFC.
Fox Sports on the call there. They couldn't scoop and score. We couldn't cover the Brandon Allen-led Bengals. That's what I get for betting the Giants.
It was 19-10. I felt so good about that line.
I didn't, and then I saw them. I just pissed me off.
You gave up a late touchdown to Brandon Allen.
God,
this is inexcusable.
How about Tennessee went on the road against Indy? By the way, Fox Sports on the call there. Tennessee on the road vying for the AFC South supremacy and looking to avenge the loss that Indy handed them just a couple weeks ago.
Hand off. Henry weaves through. Henry is in again. Touchdown! King Henry has three. Crown him.
CBS Sports on the call there. Tennessee destroys the Colts 45-26. Derrick Henry with 178. If he averages 149 or more in his final five games, he will get to 2,000 yards this year. Whew. In the month of December, he averages in his career 130. So it's not impossible that Derrick Henry could be sniffing 2,000 rushing yards.
Surprised by that outcome. Not that they won, but the fact that they ran the ball the way they did against the Colts, who was supposed to have one of the best defenses in the NFL and statistically do. That we're reaching that time of year. This is what he did last year. He took over in November and December, let him do an AFC title game. And if you're a Titan fan, you got to be fired up because he's doing it again. Last week against Baltimore, this week against Indy.
Browns on the road against the Jags, and it came close, but Cleveland's defense held strong.
Similar situation. Remember the Texans game, same position. And they ended up missing the 2 points.
That's right. Bledding looking right. Probes the defense. Throws back in the end zone. It's broken up. Incomplete. Andrew Sendejo was there.
Talk about an embarrassment of officiating in this game. This shouldn't even have come down to this. Cleveland got absolutely screwed. They picked up a first down. And somehow the ref said there was like 9 inches between the ball and the stick.
It was a first down.
It was at the stick.
It was at the stick. There was no gap.
There wasn't even room for a, what was the note card Steratore put in a couple years ago.
Don't get me started on this. As somebody who gambled a decent amount of money on the Browns -6.5. By the way, before that fourth down play in which they picked up the first down that they would have covered the spread if they gave it to him, third down, they had a play action rollout for Mayfield, and he had Kareem Hunt wide open, and he threw like a bullet behind him.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Just lob it.
And you pick up a first down.
But Cleveland wins, and give them credit. They're 8-3 on the year. Let's go to Minnesota. This was a wild ending. The Panthers really controlled things until late in the fourth quarter.
Justin Jefferson open with one-on-one routes, and then he's run the in-and-out route to get a touchdown. He's run over top to get a touchdown.
Empty backfield, second and goal. Cousins to the end zone. Touchdown! Redemption for Chad Beebe!
Fox Sports on the call there. Yeah, Beebe, he had muffed a punt, and we thought that was the game. The Viking defense held, and Kirk Cousins and company get almost a walk-off win here and beat the Panthers 28-27.
Defense tried to give it up, but the Panthers missed their last field goal attempt. And this will fall on some deaf ears, but let's give Kirk Cousins some credit. He's actually been playing well. They're like, they've won 5 out of 6 or 4 out of 5 or something. He's got 12 touchdowns and one pick in that stretch. They've turned their season around. It looked like it was going to be bleak early on. The loss last week to Dallas was a really tough one. They have a come-from-behind win this week, and they're firmly in that wild-card playoff chase in the NFC.
I was just going to say, how does 6-5 feel versus 5-6? That loss to Dallas was brutal.
Much different.
This game sucked, but also had an exciting ending. Arizona on the road against the Pats.
Snap and hold are good. Falk is good! And the Patriots win it!
Fox Sports on the call there. Pats win on a walk-off field goal, 20-17. And look at the Cardinals dropping a couple games here.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they're going to be able to hold on to a playoff spot. They've really struggled the last few weeks.
That hurts. I don't know how much of it is the injury to Kyler Murray. He looks a little banged up here the last 2 weeks against Seattle and now New England. They built a 10-0 lead early on, too. Cam Newton was terrible in that game. They had like 80 passing yards and 2 interceptions. You can't lose that one if you want to make the playoffs.
No commentary needed for this. The Dolphins beat up on the lowly Jets.
Not changed in replay, though, and the Dolphins continue to drive, although now it's 3rd-and-8. Fitzpatrick lofts one for the end zone, and it is caught! Touchdown, Mike Gesicki! The New Jersey native back home and now in the end zone to give Miami the lead.
CBS Sports on the call there. That wasn't even the ugliest game of the day. I think the ugliest game of the day was in Denver at Mile High, where the Saints get an easy win.
Bunch to the left, Hill under center. And Hill gives it to Murray, skipping to the left. Big hole up the middle, and Murray takes it to the house. Touchdown, Saints. Latavius Murray, a 36-yard score.
Yeah, ESPN Radio there. Saints win 31-3. You want a fun stat line? The first stat of its kind in NFL league history. The Broncos became the first team to have more interceptions than completed passes in a game. They had two picks and one completion.
I thought they were the first since the Chargers in like 98.
I believe they tied two completions and two picks.
Gotcha,
I believe they
okay.
were the first team to have one completion with two interceptions.
It was an interesting game for anybody who's ever thought, I could step in and be an NFL quarterback.
I was thinking the exact same thing all Sunday.
Hinton played quarterback in college and he completed one pass for
13
yards.
He's in the 99%
yards.
Of you and
yes,
I.
Yes, yes.
Or the 1%, and yes. we're the, you know, and he's in the 1%, and he still looked
Dear
like
God.
That.
It was ugly. Part of me felt bad that they had to play also. They didn't follow the protocol, so this is what you've been warned about and why you need to wear your mask when you're around other people indoors. And yeah, kind of a bit of a knock on the old Taysom Hill's the next franchise quarterback game. He didn't play well. They won that game because Denver was playing a wide receiver at quarterback.
San Francisco on the road against L.A., looking to pull the upset, and they were able to do it.
Goff to throw. Hit as he throws it, it's intercepted. It's another 49er takeaway. That's the rookie Kinlaw into the end zone. 49er touchdown.
Kinlaw with a pick six. Fox Sports on the call. Niners get the game-winning field goal at the horn, 23-20. They've won 4 in a row against the Rams.
Yeah.
Kansas City went into Tampa, and talk about a team that should have covered very easily and just let their foot off the pedal. It's the Kansas City Chiefs, but they get the win nonetheless.
2nd-and-4 for the Chiefs. Mahomes, snap at his belt. Works the right boundary. Tyreek Hill over the shoulder. Touchdown, Kansas City. And continues Carlton Davis's nightmare day. And the wonderful game for Tyreek Hill. A 20-yard reception. Perfectly thrown football over the shoulder of the cheetah, who's putting on a clinic.
Yeah, Chiefs Radio Network there. Mahomes, 462, 3 touchdowns. Tyreek Hill, 13 catches, 269, and 3 touchdowns.
How did they not cover this spread? It was 17-0. It was 27-10 going into the fourth.
Don't get me started. This is ridiculous. They should have easily covered that spread. Instead, it looks like a 3-point win, and everyone's like, oh, the Bucs might still be good. All right, and finally, Sunday Night Football. Rodgers had no problem taking care of the Bears.
1st-and-goal, Green Bay.
18! And I get
Jones, Rodgers backpedals, puts it up top. Touchdown, Green Bay.
That is so unbelievable, Mike.
Alan Lazard with a leap to no one.
Yeah, NBC Sports there. I turned this game off at halftime. Packers,
yeah, I did too.
There was nothing to watch. They were going to win that game easy. They win 41-25, still in the hunt for the best record in the NFC. There's the NFL whip around. We do it every Monday at 1. No prime time today because the Seahawks are on Monday Night Football against the Eagles. We'll stick in the NFL, maybe get back to college football at the bottom of the hour. I want to talk about some of these COVID-related NFL stories. They're pretty interesting, including one team playing home games in a different stadium. That's next, Dirt and Sprague on the Fan. All right, we'll dive into the Pac-12 coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Washington down 21-0 at the half. Arizona gets blown out. Colorado continues winning.
Can I ask the question, is UCLA good?
They're about what I expected.
Okay.
Well, we can talk about that as well. Okay. Yeah, the Bruins bounce back from a brutal loss to the Ducks and beating Arizona this weekend. Oh, and Stanford beats Cal.
On a block VAT.
I would say it's the worst way to lose a football game is what happened to Cal.
Yeah, let alone a rivalry game when you haven't won a game yet this year. Like, ooh, that's brutal.
It does not feel good. But, you know, there's a lot going on in the NFL, and we've largely been staying away from COVID-esque stories for a few weeks here. We try to, like, sprinkle them in when we can. We feel it's important. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty... It's a pretty big topic right now in football, both in college and the pros, about what's going on in COVID. So Minnesota has over 47 active COVID recipients. They will not play their game this weekend. Thus, Northwestern will clinch their division.
Yeah, that's the way it's going to end.
After losing to lowly Michigan State.
You also, I think, connect forward and say Minnesota's probably not going to play next weekend either.
Oh, no, not with that many cases. You look at Stanford, they're dealing with the Santa Clara County situation, which is also impacting the 49ers. Mm-hmm. So Stanford cannot play games in their stadium.
Nope.
They're hinting at playing in the Pacific Northwest. Many people are kind of tying them to the Husky Stadium because they play Washington in Seattle. And then I think a week after that, they would play Stanford. So their basic thinking is...
They play Oregon State. Stanford will play Oregon State.
Oh, Yeah, Stanford will play Oregon State. Yeah. Stanford will play Washington. Stanford also plays Oregon State.
That's their last game of the year.
Let's go up to the Pacific Northwest. I don't know if it's Husky Stadium. Maybe it's Lewis and Clark. I have no clue.
Yeah.
And that would actually be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
But they have the Huskies and the Beavers, so the thinking there is let's just go up there. So they will not play.
Totally normal just to uproot college kids and have them live out of hotels for the next couple of weeks.
Well, to remember, this whole thing started, and they did not have a season because it was out of abundance of safety for the student-athlete, and now we're at a point where we're just relocating an entire team.
Well, one thing too, the Cal stuff, because they've dealt with this not quite as bad as Stanford, but they haven't wanted to move their team because they've been able to keep their infection rates under control. Now, they had to deal with the quarantining and the contact tracing. That's why they had to miss their first game, but it was only one positive test that they had on their team. It just happened to be the entire defensive line that had to sit out for a week. But some of them don't want to leave where they're at because the virus is raging in other parts of the country. But where they're at, not quite the case.
So that's going on with Stanford. The 49ers also dealing with those same implications cannot play a football game. They found this as they were loading their plane to get into LA on Saturday. They were notified that, hey, you can't play home games for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So they are going to be playing their home games at the Arizona Cardinals Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. That'll look totally normal. And COVID's going on. Baltimore's game with Pittsburgh was rescheduled to Tuesday, and we still haven't gotten word if they will even play that game. So far, it sounds like there's only been one new positive test, although they stepped in their facility yesterday and they were instantly told by the NFL that they could not be at their facility, so they had to turn around. They basically do not get to practice going into that game. Denver's quarterbacks all were ineligible because of lack of mask wearing. They all turned out to be negative, so they had to play Kendall Minton?
Hinton, I think.
Hinton?
Something like that.
Something. Anyways, that kid played yesterday. He was a practice squad wideout, and it turns out they could have played a quarterback because nobody had COVID. So it's just, there's a lot going on with COVID and football, and, quite frankly, a lot of it sucks. And I can't follow the NFL protocols. I can't tell how we decide what games get punted later on down the road and what games get pushed to Tuesday and what teams just get ultimately screwed. Not giving the Broncos quarterbacks a pass here. Drew Locke actually did a full on, like, we're sorry, we didn't.
Yeah, he tested positive. He was in the room. Nobody was wearing the masks.
Yeah, so they are to blame a bit here, but like, you're just going to allow a team to take the field without any active quarterbacks?
Did
you see the report from Peter Schrager?
No, I didn't see that.
They almost played their quality coach at quarterback because he played at UCF in 2012.
Yeah, and the NFL denied him to coach to the roster.
Yeah, so they had to play this kid yesterday who took a beating from Cam Jordan all day.
The NFL's policy is we are going to play games at any and every cost because they don't want to have games canceled. The biggest issue, and this is both a league thing and a player thing, is that if you have a game canceled, Nobody gets paid. Now, why is that the policy? I don't know. This should have been set out at the start of the year that if you have issues and your team is the one that's testing positive and is unable to play, you have to forfeit that game. You have to forego your game check, but the other team doesn't. This should have been pretty simple to figure out, because if that was the case, you wouldn't be going through this right now with Pittsburgh and Baltimore. And Pittsburgh would be getting the forfeited win. They'd get their game checks, and they'd be moving on for the next week. We had a listener point out, why did Denver have to play Sunday, and why are we punting on the Baltimore game? I think the main difference is it's one position. Baltimore currently has 19 players on the COVID list.
Including Lamar.
Tested
positive.
And every time they're playing whack-a-mole. Every time guys get off the COVID list, they add new ones on. They just had four players come off the COVID list and be ready to return today and had to add four new guys to the COVID list. So they can't, they have an outbreak going on in their locker room. So they are slightly different scenarios, and the NFL has tried to punt this thing out as far as they can to find a way to play it. But I don't see how in any way, shape, or form you can play that game tomorrow without 19 players on your roster. That's a huge chunk of your roster.
You got to bet Pittsburgh. And they're not even practicing.
Sure. I mean, I bet New Orleans minus a 17.5 because they're playing a backup quarterback. They ended up covering the spread.
Yeah, I didn't.
You didn't?
I mean, I knew they would win. I just...
They weren't going to get a first down.
I know. But the under of that game was 36.
It hit. The under hit. Yeah, it was 31-3 or 34-3.
They only scored 34 points total. So there was something fishy about that game, and I thought, what if they did a Wildcat, and they opened the game playing Wildcat and then quickly got out of that?
Right.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
The biggest issue is the game check thing. And why that was the policy, I don't know. But Pittsburgh doesn't want to let this game go because then their players don't get a game check. And that's unfair to them because they've done nothing wrong. They're ready to play. We had to go through this earlier in the year where they didn't want to move their game. They had to postpone the Baltimore game till later. They kick around their bye week. Like, everything in their schedule got changed. This is not Pittsburgh's fault, but there's a reason they're trying to get this game is because these guys want to get paid. And if they don't play it, one, that kicks in the NFL's added playoff spot because you would have a game canceled. So you would then go to 8 in the NFC and 8 in the AFC. But you're going to have a pissed off locker room in Pittsburgh because their guys aren't going to get paid.
It's just, I just think there's too many inconsistencies with it.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, not that the Broncos are playing for a Super Bowl here, but if I'm a Bronco fan, you're probably not getting the number one pick, right? So maybe you're not thinking quarterback yet. Maybe you will when the draft gets here. But going into that game, you're always wanting to see your team win. Not that they would have beat New Orleans healthy anyway, but you still, like, you don't get to push that game back. You're just going to make us play with no quarterback. Yeah. They knew there were no quarterbacks there. Now, again, it's the quarterback's fault for not masking up. So I get responsibility. I just think the NFL at large, just the inconsistencies of picking and choosing who gets pushed, who gets rescheduled.
No doubt.
I hate it. I think it sucks. And I feel really bad for all the fans of these teams because I think you see a clear advantage one way. Like yesterday, we knew the Saints were winning that game. Not that they weren't going to win again with the other guys playing. It just, you know, it's a certainty, 100% certainty that the Broncos are not winning that. And just like with the Pittsburgh game, maybe Baltimore will shock me and I'll be an idiot. There's no way in hell I would bet Baltimore to beat Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh's actually gotten to practice.
Yeah.
Baltimore hasn't even been in their facility in 5-6 days.
Yeah, the good news for Denver is they haven't had any more positive tests, so that's a positive that they're going to be on track to try and get back to normal. Fangio had a quote where he said that, you know, he thinks that there's discipline on the table for their quarterbacks from the NFL coming down, maybe from the team as well. And he said he felt like the NFL wanted to make an example of him. Like, that was a pretty clear case. The NFL has called out and you know, reminded every club of what they need to do and the enhanced, you know, protections and wear your mask and not too many people in one room. Like, they have been adamant about this. And then when you have a case that pops up where you got a bunch of guys sitting around a room where one of them ends up testing positive and the other one aren't wearing masks, like, that is clearly flaunting the NFL's policy. So I don't know. Maybe the NFL did want to make an example of them.
So get this, and then we'll go to the Pac-12. Per a source for Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, there are new fears of Ravens players refusing to play tomorrow night, which would technically be a wildcat strike.
Yeah, they haven't practiced since the day before their last game.
It could create major issues between the NFL and NFLPA if it happens. Potentially, it would jeopardize the balance of the season. How about that report just coming out?
It's not safe. How is that safe? You haven't practiced in a week and a half.
It's not. It's
without 19 guys, like, go play a football game because we don't want to have to cancel or forfeit a game?
Just cancel the game. Cancel a damn game. You haven't done it yet. Cancel the game.
They tell that to Pittsburgh because they're not going to get paid.
Yeah, I said this with the Buffalo-Tennessee thing, though. If it's one team's fault and not the others, that other team should not have it jeopardized.
Agreed.
All right, let's get into this Pac-12. A weird weekend in the Pac-12. Some schools kind of showing their true colors. Other schools, like Washington, are they the team to beat in the Pac-12? We'll get to that next.
Well, another twist in this Baltimore-Pittsburgh saga. Adam Schefter saying that the NFL is now pondering a third postponement of the game. So remember, it was scheduled to be played on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That was going to be the game of the day on Thanksgiving we were all excited for.
That would have been the game. Without that would have been our only chance at a good game.
So the two games sucked. That was kind of a letdown. So then it got moved to Sunday. And like, what the hell, we'll just move it a couple days. And then it got moved to Tuesday. So the game, they're trying to play it tomorrow. But now the report that the Ravens players might refuse to play tomorrow night because they haven't had a chance to practice in a week and a half. The NFL won't let them in their facility. I also saw added to this that they were scheduled, so they weren't going to be able to practice today. That game is supposed to take place tomorrow night. They would be leaving Baltimore like tomorrow morning and flying into Pittsburgh. You know what's hitting Pittsburgh tomorrow morning?
Snowstorm.
Snowstorm.
Sweet.
So it's like even that on top of it, of like, we don't even know if we can get into Pittsburgh, okay, because there's a damn snowstorm coming into town. This is just, what a cluster, man.
So Schefter just followed it up and said, this is currently what the schedule is supposed to be. Week 13 has Washington at Pittsburgh on Sunday, and the Cowboys are at the Ravens on next Monday night's football game.
Yeah, those games are impacted. If
you're pushing this Tuesday game...
You can't. If you push it past Tuesday, that's their next game. You can't force them to play Thursday and then Sunday. It just doesn't work that way. So then you're kicking every other game down. So I don't know.
So said if they cancel this automatically clicks in eighth expanded game.
If you have a game that doesn't end up getting played, it expands the playoffs.
So what would their problem with that be? Because at this point, I think you just need to call this. You're putting both teams in jeopardy here.
I'm not sure why the response hasn't been all along to just add a week at the end of the season and you hope that there's only one game that you have to make up. But I think that then calls into question something we do in baseball often, is that then you have a team maybe sitting at home for 2 weeks off. Do they become rusty? You know what I mean? Like then there's a competitive advantage thing of, well, now a team gets 2 weeks off before they got to play a playoff game.
I think the other thing you look at is there's several other teams that have ongoing COVID issues too. Once you create the room, now I think you would have some other games fall into there.
Sure, you could have played the Denver New Orleans game that extra week.
Exactly. So this hardline refusal by the league to not go to an 18th week is forcing them into much more dangerous situations for quote player safety than
without
if they just do it. You already whacked all the Pro Bowl stuff. Just condense down, take that week. You can keep the Super Bowl on the same week. Obviously, there's not going to be the number of people flooding in there. I don't know what their problem is.
Yeah,
I really don't.
This was all, I think, set up initially by just making the mistake of not having games be counted as forfeits. I don't know why that was so hard to figure out.
Well, the Ravens, that would suck for them. I mean, they probably deserve it because of the COVID outbreak. But if you look at their record, I mean, they take a loss
here. Sure, but that's 2020. That's a COVID football season, right? And as listeners are pointing out, this all started because their strength and conditioning coach showed up with COVID and he didn't wear a mask. He spread it around the entire locker room. So why is there not more punishment for that? Like, that's a...
You haven't heard anything about punishment for them either. Like, you hear about Denver. Why'd I hear about Denver and that was yesterday?
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people are raising of, like, what the hell? So, yes, I feel bad for the players because it's not necessarily their fault that their strength coach didn't wear a mask and spread it around, but... I think this could have been handled a lot better. That, hey, you're not ready to go. You got an outbreak. That's fine. You're going to have to forfeit that game. We'll move on to next week. You forego your game check. We're going to make the other players get those game checks because they don't deserve to lose out on a paycheck for not having something take place that wasn't their fault.
Right.
And I think those are the two biggest hangups right now, is that, one, they don't want to trigger that automatic expanded playoff. And they don't, like, Pittsburgh is going to fight tooth and nail to be able to get those game checks. Because, again, like, that's you only get 16 of those a year. Like, NFL players don't get paid for 12 months out of the season. You get paid per game that you play. So you take one of those away from a team, like, Pittsburgh's not cool with that.
Well, and I'm trying to go back. Did the Players Association agree with the NFL, or was that a stipulation that's always kind of been in place? Because
I don't remember how that negotiation went.
I think you look back on that now, and if they agreed to that, that was idiotic. Because there are teams, as you mentioned, Pittsburgh's been in this. Buffalo was almost in this early this year, where their game becomes in jeopardy, and it's, if that doesn't get played, you miss that check. Well, that's not fair to half the other side.
Right.
And if you're Pittsburgh, look, you're playing for something special here.
You're undefeated.
You're an undefeated team. You clearly have the one seed in the AFC. You got home field advantage, which could be big against Kansas City. You don't have to travel at all, as dangerous as Mahomes and company are. What are you going to do? You're going to play this game on a Wednesday and then turn around and you have to play Sunday? That's not fair. Yeah. That's not healthy. Talk about caring about player safety. That's the opposite of that.
Exactly.
This is ridiculous. Just cancel the game.
I know.
Award Pittsburgh their game check. Punish Baltimore by not giving theirs. And expand the playoff by one game. Or, you know, be smart and flexible and create an open week to make up some of these games.
And then it would allow you at least, because we're creeping up towards the end of the year. I mean, we're not quite there yet, but we're getting closer. That would allow, to Swigard's point, it would allow future instances that pop up for you to be safe and just say, you know what, we'll push that to week 18. Don't worry about getting the game in. We'll be okay. Now, if you get a team that has another one that's canceled after that, then that becomes a whole different conversation. Florio, by the way, is now kind of echoing Schefter's point, and it just sounds like the two things are coming together. That the threat that Baltimore is making of the players of saying we're not going to play tomorrow night, that is, might be the driving force for getting the game moved to Wednesday or Thursday. But then again, to Schefter's point, if you move the game to Wednesday or Thursday, next week's games are off the books, and you got to figure out when you're going to play those. So, well, good luck figuring this one out, man.
You know, I'll say it one more time. Denver, too, as much and or as irresponsible as they were in how they handled that in their own little, you know, group room.
Yeah.
For the NFL to know a team doesn't have a quarterback,
make them play,
and make them play, that's a problem. It doesn't need to be, everything doesn't need to be equal and fair in terms of, well, they had 20 plus, and so that means they get, no, it doesn't have to be that way. But if you're going to punish some teams, but then like flex games in different spots while other teams don't have like the most important position to play, you're losing me on what you're doing here.
Yeah.
And you know what I worry about? What the hell do you do if this keeps going as bad as it is and it's just going to get colder? Winter's just going to get worse. What happens when this goes on in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's the disaster scenario.
Are we going to have a Super Bowl in March?
Yeah, what do you do if a playoff game has to get canceled or moved?
I thought about scheduling a golf trip the week after the Super Bowl scheduled, and I canceled on it because I said there's a possibility that the Super Bowl is played any time in the month of February.
We're pretty close to getting it already pushed back a week, so we'll see if it gets pushed back even further than that. A reporter for the Baltimore Sun now is saying that the players are boycotting because they're unhappy about having to play on Tuesday,
good,
given how everything's gone. And one source said that the NFL offered Wednesday as a compromise, and the players said, nope, they want Thursday, but no consensus has been reached yet. So
if you play Thursday, how do you turn around and play on Sunday and Monday?
Good luck figuring that one out, man. That's above my pay grade, but that's what we're going through with Baltimore and Pittsburgh right now. We'll see how that pans out, but it's looking more and more like that game tomorrow night between the Steelers and the Ravens will not be playable. Let you know if it gets rescheduled here before the end of the show. All right, we didn't get to it there. Let's get into the Pac-12. What do we make of Washington struggling in the first half and then coming back against Utah? Also, is UCLA good? Huh? We'll get to the Pac-12 coming up next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, crunch time. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Even though we're on pause, your local Crunch Fitness doesn't want you to stop crunching, so go to crunch.com, take a Crunch Live workout, or look for other at-home workout suggestions. Coming up in the final hour, we'll get back into the Oregon-Oregon State rivalry game.
I retweeted a fellow media member who got the call of Doc.
Uh-huh.
And it's always a good call.
Sure.
But, you know, you could kind of get the sense of he almost kind of did it and he stayed away from the Civil War.
Don't say it. Don't do it.
And a couple people were like, yeah, you know, he's great, but this is ridiculous.
The rivalry game, the Northwest rivalry game.
See, that doesn't.
We'll get back to that.
That just sounds stupid to me.
Very stupid.
The rivalry game.
Very
it's
stupid.
Like, okay.
At least in the first one that didn't have a name, at least it was a good game. Like, imagine if you have the double whammy of losing the title and then it's like a blowout either way.
Yeah.
Like, that would have sucked.
We'll get into the game itself. There's a lot to discuss. And for the audience that missed the opening of the show, we'll bring that to you. We do need to hash out the Dave Fleming, Rod Gilmore.
Yes.
And
yes,
Shelly Smith.
Shelly
broadcast.
Shelly was frozen. Is she alive? Have we checked on Shelly? I thought she was on Antarctica.
Her niece was almost murdered with an icicle, and I'm pretty confident she was talking with gauze in her mouth.
Yeah, like totally overlooked that fact.
Isn't this how she sounded?
Yeah, you know, I'm down here, and I got something that I'm talking about, yeah. And I can't really tell you what's in my mouth.
Yeah, she said her daughter got hit in the head by her niece got hit in the head.
Because she went to Oregon.
Yes, and she was at a Civil War game at Reser, and
yeah.
She's a Beaver fan, threw it at her or something.
She said, yeah.
She was okay. She got knocked out pretty good or something like that. Like, wait,
no, she said,
what?
She like alluded to it not killing her, but then she's like, but she learned a hard lesson. And it's like... Well, you got ice thrown at your head. That shouldn't happen anywhere.
And somebody had a funny tweet. That's assault. We'll get back into what we're going to say.
I felt for her watching her do her hits.
Yeah, I don't think she did much after that first hit because she looked like she was frozen. So I hope they got her a heater because it was cold, but I didn't think it was quite that cold down there. Elsewhere in the conference, what do we make of Utah and Washington? So that had a chance to be some silver lining for Duck fans losing the Oregon State game. And then you go into Saturday and you're watching Washington. They're down 21-0 at the half. You're thinking, all right, at least, hey, you know, we'll get that to break our way after a rough loss yesterday. Didn't happen. Washington outscored them 24-0 in the second half. They came back to win 24-21. It was a turnover frenzy between the two teams.
Sure was.
I'm not quite sure what to make. So Utah doesn't look great against USC, but you give them the benefit like, hey, it's your first game. You're going to be a little sluggish. I understand that. Washington, same thing. They didn't look great against Oregon State. Then they come out and they pound Arizona, and you're like, all right, well, maybe Washington's the team to beat. They didn't show up. They were awful in the first half, but then they come back. By the way, on the 7 combined turnovers in this game, and I don't really know what to make of it for either team.
Yeah, Morris had 3 picks. Mm-hmm. Bentley had 2 picks.
He had 2, and they lost 2 fumbles. One of them was like on the 10-yard line. The running back just dropped it at the 10.
Yeah, it's one of those weird circumstances where I give credit to Washington for winning the game. Utah did a whole hell of a lot gift wrapping that bitch to them, because I'll tell you right now, if you don't get that many turnovers, I'm pretty sure you're S out of luck, especially that one, that fumble.
When they were about to score.
Near the goal line when they were about to score. I still don't know really what to make of Washington. I think they've got some really nice pieces. The tight end, Cade Otton, he is a stud. He's Morris's security blanket, 8 catches, 108 yards. Puka Nacua, we know how good he can be. Their running game it wasn't really there on Saturday. And Morris is, I don't know, he's up and he's down. I've seen good play and I've seen some really poor play.
Yeah, he threw some really bad interceptions.
Look, Washington's at the top of this division because of the record. I'm not sold that they're the best team in their division. I'm not even sold 100% they're the second best team in their division. I think Oregon State against them, that was a great game that went back and forth. Some wild, weird stuff happened both ways. Give Washington the credit. They got the dub, but it's not like they blew them out by 20. Mm-hmm. And then they're playing Oregon in 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks, yeah, last game of the year.
They'll get the Ducks, and Oregon will be able to respond to their loss against Oregon State to try to win the North by beating the Huskies. I don't know. It's with COVID in the Pac-12, it's tough to gauge. I think some teams, it's clear to say, okay, good. Not great, good. Mm-hmm. Washington's in that category. They can be good. But they've also shown that they can be a little mediocre. And if they show up that way against Oregon, the way they did against Utah or the second half against the Beavs, I don't think you're beating Oregon. But again, Oregon's defense isn't stopping a whole lot of people right now. So maybe they'll be able to feast on them. But you give them credit for being 3-0. Utah played much better. Give Kyle Whittingham and his
That's going to be an interesting
staff.
Game on Saturday night. Oregon State at Utah is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, because I don't know. I don't have a feel for that one either.
I don't think Bentley's that good, but I thought Utah looked a lot better defensively than they did against USC. You turn the ball over 4 times against a team that has more talent than you. You're not going to win.
Let me ask you this. So Tyson alluded to this. I saw this in the post game on social media. Like this Washington offense, right? Some people make a big deal of it. I don't know. I've seen tales of 2 halves with this team. I've seen them not look good, and I've seen them look really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to make of them. I really don't. I know that's a bit of a fence-sitting, cop-out answer. I think the toughest thing is just evaluating when you see all the games they've played. They show up in some halves, and then they don't. They're almost Oregon State in a certain regard. Like, Oregon State has bad halves, and they play better in the other half. And they're obviously better. They beat Oregon State. but I don't know if I'm legit buying them as the best team in the Pac-12 North.
I mean, I think you have to just as of right now because they're 3-0.
Why do you have to? Just because of the standings? I mean, that we'll see where it's going to be in a couple weeks.
I mean, they beat Oregon State head-to-head. They got the benefit of some calls. There's no doubt about that. And Oregon has not looked good the last 2 weeks. We haven't seen Washington State play in 2 weeks. Cal hasn't won a game. And Stanford has already lost head-to-head games. So I think right now I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Though I think what we're getting in the conference is exactly what we thought we were going to get, which makes it funny that sometimes we act surprised like 3 or 4 weeks in. What did we all say during the summer as we previewed the conference? We don't know who the best team is.
No.
There's like 4 or 5 teams that could rise up and maybe win it. And look, it sucks again because it's another year you don't have an Alabama or Ohio State or a Clemson. But I do get a lot of joy out of turning these games on and not knowing what the hell is going to happen. Like thinking Oregon's going to blow UCLA out, huh? UCLA almost wins. I think Washington's going to run away from Utah because Utah didn't look good against USC. And Utah's up 21-0 at the half. Like Stanford and Cal, I didn't know what to make of it. I thought Cal was going to win that game because Stanford hadn't looked good. Stanford gets the win in that one, right? Like UCLA, which was terrible in week one against Colorado, better in week two against Cal, almost beats Oregon. Then they get a nice 27-10 win over Arizona.
That was a really good win for them.
I don't know what the hell's going to happen week in and week out.
Is Colorado the best team?
Colorado might be. They played San Diego State this week. They beat Brady Hoke, so I give him credit for that. But
by the way, let me ask you this. Are you buying the theory? There's a theory. USC ducked them.
Oh, they were afraid of playing that game? Well, I don't know if I'm quite buying that theory.
It's not like how good did Arizona look against USC?
They look good. And they looked terrible the last 2 weeks.
It seems like everybody plays USC, looks pretty good, and then USC either squeaks out a win or they don't have to play their game.
Yeah, it's chaos, but I'm loving it. And I'm sure the chaos is going to continue. Some compelling games that we'll get into as the week goes on this coming weekend.
Just pass this note along. Ravens Steelers officially postponed to Wednesday now.
Oh, okay. Let's push it one more day. That should
Let's play
everything.
Wednesday and then play Sunday. That'd be great for
the
bodies.
Well, then you're going to have to move those games to like Monday or Tuesday. So, hey, maybe we'll get some bonus Monday or Tuesday football next week. Oh, dear Lord. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Even though they're on pause, they want you to continue to get your workouts in at crunch.com. And once they're ready and it's safe to be back at the gym, they'll be there for you.
If there's anything I can say definitively after this weekend in the Pac-12, it is that as sure as hell is no playoff team in this conference.
Nope, that is the truth there, Bob. Let's stick in that angle. As Oregon State gets the upset win over Oregon, 41-38, your thoughts are welcome. We had a lot of them come in earlier. We didn't get a chance to read them, so I'm going to do that. 503-250-1080. What did you make of the broadcast? We didn't talk about that yet. Rod Gilmore, I cannot stand him. And then Pac-12 officiating, stand up, man. Another stellar weekend for the officials in the conference. Loaded final hour. We'll start with Oregon and Oregon State next on 1080 The Fam.